Episode 4 of Welcome to Level 7. The Incredible Hulk returns, plus a Man of Steel mini review.
Welcome to Level 7, the podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Welcome to Level 7, the unofficial Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Daniel Butcher.
And I'm the other one, Ben Avery.
I was trying to intro you in and everything.
I was trying to keep the high energy going, you know.
Yeah.
The back and forth.
Then we just killed it.
Yeah. We both killed it.
I mostly blame myself.
Of course, we could have talked about it ahead of time. Maybe.
Yeah. You're planning.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a good thing.
It's not like it's late at night for me or that you're in some sort of strange situation recording right at the moment. So who needs to plan?
Okay. So let's just get this out there right now. This is the first time I've ever done this. I am podcasting from a bathroom. Now, there's reasons for this, but the main reason being this is the only room that's away from where my family is sleeping in the condo where we are staying on Lake Michigan.
I just want to know, when I hear bathroom, is there like an attendant in there with those little tiny soaps and mints?
It's not that kind of condo.
No, not that kind of condo. All right. No.
But
well,
out of principle, I am
your bathroom.
Yeah. Out of principle, though, just so everyone knows, I'm sitting on the floor. It's carpeted floor. It's nice. I mean, this is a nice place, but I am not sitting on the chair that is provided with this room.
I like to call it a lounge.
So,
that's not it. Again, that's not why we're here to talk.
No, that's not.
We're
not here to talk about any of that kind of thing.
We are here to talk about the Hulk movie that's actually part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're talking about The Incredible Hulk.
Directed by, is his name Leterrier? Is that who it is?
Wait, we're supposed to do research?
Uh-oh.
Louis Leterrier? Or is it Louis?
I think it's Louis. I'm pretty sure it's Louis.
As I think of this movie, I'm going to be honest, I don't even think of the director. I think of Ed Norton because he had a huge influence on this movie, on the script, on the feel for it. And I really, honestly appreciate what's been done here.
I understand that there's a 3-hour cut somewhere that he put together a couple weeks before the movie was released. And they said no, but like he was a big part of things. I think that's just the way he rolls, though.
Well, I think he's probably a highly creative individual, and I think that much like the director of the last Hulk movie, Mr. Aang, I think that he had a plan on how he wanted this movie to be seen, and that the wishes of the director had nothing to do with it.
I would probably agree with you there.
And I'm going to be honest. If I was him and I had the sort of pull that he had over this movie, I think I probably would have pushed for something very, very similar as we talked through this.
Well, and he was the name that this movie was going to hang on. The director, I had never heard of, or if I had heard of him, I didn't care what I had heard. But Ed Norton, I mean, he was just known for picking challenging roles. And so for him to come in and do this, and, you know, he's the name. He's the Robert Downey Jr. of Incredible Hulk.
And sadly for him, I don't think it turned out the way he wanted.
No, it didn't. But that's partially his fault. But he did a lot of good things here. And because I think it was him who was kind of bringing in the vibe from the TV show, if I understand correctly.
As we get through our outline here, I have an entire topic that's just Bill Bixby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because without Bill Bixby, we do not have this version of the Hulk.
Well, let's start with your outline then. Your outline has the words reboot-reorigin.
Okay. So, as you know, one of my major concerns when we watched The Hulk was, what's up with all this animal DNA junk? This isn't the Hulk origin that I'm used to. Where's the gamma radiation? Where's the accident with some sort of big gamma bomb or gamma explosion? I mean, yeah, we've got a little bit of that, but what's all this extra animal stuff and baby stuff? Let's just have a straight out accident, because that's the Hulk's origin.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say in the credits, they re-origin him.
Yeah, they don't just change the origin. I look at those credits. The credits, to me, that's the movie that a lot of people probably wanted. Is you have the origin. He's sitting in the chair just like in the TV show. He has the accident. And you don't have a whole mini movie. What?
We don't have him stopping a machine from irradiating somebody else?
No. I mean, this one, I won't say it's better scientifically, but I think it's probably better from a dramatic standpoint.
Maybe. Good to see that Ben Avery's not really ready to make a stand on the science of the Hulk.
Yeah. I'm not going to go there. I mean, if you want scientific realism, you need to go with a gamma bomb that he pushes someone into a trench and protects them from – wait. Okay, never mind. But yeah, anyway. Yeah.
But I really do. I think we're getting back here with Ed Norton to an origin that we're used to, that we're familiar with, and one that we have seen if you watch five seasons of The Incredible Hulk from back in the 70s and early 80s.
You saw this every episode.
Yeah, this is a very, very comfortable spot for somebody who's a superhero TV fan.
Yeah. And – you know, it also reminds me of Wolverine, though. Wolverine Origins, where the opening credits is a whole movie in and of itself. And then you move on into the movie. And I feel, you know, we've got the whole story here. And when we pick up after the credits are done, it feels like a sequel.
Well,
and, it's not and a sequel to Ang Lee's Hulk, but it feels like we're watching a sequel.
Well, and maybe in this case, you're 100% right. Because I think with Wolverine, when we talk about Wolverine Origins, that those opening sequence really is. That is the movie that we all wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But here with the Incredible Hulk, could he have really gone back, 3 years later after the Banna movie and redone the origin again? I don't think he could have.
No.
I think the only way he could have handled it is to do exactly what you said. Make the credits another movie within themselves, and then make his movie the sequel to that.
And they were fortunate in that they were able to do the origin in shorthand. I mean, this is a character like Superman, where you could do the origin just very quick. You can do Incredible Hulk's origin, one sentence. It's, you know, a man irradiated in an accident, and now his anger lets out a monster. He's Jekyll and Hyde. You know, you can tell that story in 5 minutes, and they did. And they did it every week in 30 seconds for, you know, 5 years. But yeah, this is – I like this. I like where we're going.
And these credits, if you pay close attention, one of our big questions last time was the Hulk part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe? They make it clear here in the credits for this movie that the Incredible Hulk is part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because you see S.H.I.E.L.D., you see Stark Industries, and you see Nick Fury all popping up throughout – these opening credits is just words that pass by very, very quickly, but they do help anchor you within the MCU.
And they anchor you in for the tone, too. You know, this is a very technical, not technical movie, but there's a lot of tech involved in the movie. And so when you have these words passing by, you understand, oh, there's military stuff happening here. There's files happening here. There's, you know, just like the first movie, the first Hulk movie, it sets the tone and it does a good job of it. So, yeah, I'm happy where we are. And I'm happy where we're going, or at least I'm hoping that I'll be happy where we're going. So, yeah. What do you say then? Let's talk about David Banner, or Bruce Banner.
Bruce Banner. Bob Banner. Whatever.
David Banner is the TV show, right?
Well, I was just thinking of Stan Lee and the fact that he can't keep the name right, so.
So, yeah, let's talk about Banner for a second. Banner.
So how do you feel about this Bruce Banner versus the Bannerverse Bruce Banner?
You know, I don't mind him. You know, obviously he got this part because of Fight Club. And the character in Fight Club is actually a kind of a similar kind of thing, where you have that boiling rage under the surface. But this is a much nicer guy. And he doesn't want anyone to get hurt. He wants to protect people. what I want to know is, what do you think about all the things he's doing at the beginning of the movie, where he's, you know, got the watch on, watching his heart rate, and he's learning, what is it, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so he can, you know, fight people without turning into the Hulk, but he can still, like, defend himself without, you know, but while still keeping his heart centered and stuff. What do you think about that?
Well,
is this a good place to start with our character?
I think it's an interesting place to start, because I think if you take this and the Avengers, we're seeing an arc. I think at the beginning of The Incredible Hulk, Banner is trying to control himself by keeping himself from getting angry and from getting overly excited. Mm-hmm. As we'll see later, when there's an intimate moment that he has, you know, he's worried that even that intimacy could help break out the other guy. So he's really trying to learn to master his emotions by just being calm and being flat. Now, I'll argue when we get to the end of this movie, and just a reminder, we're going to spoil the heck out of this thing.
Yes.
When we get to the end of this movie, I almost see the Avengers Hulk where I'm always angry, because he's not trying to calm himself anymore. He's trying to learn how to control the actual change, because you see that little smile there in the end. He's moving away from being the flat emotional Banner to being the I'm always angry Banner.
Yeah, and this actually wasn't in the outline, but I want to make sure we get to this, because when I first saw Avengers, I thought to myself, wow, that's just kind of – they really changed the character again. This is like the third iteration of the Hulk. And you're right. It's not – it does fit into that arc. And with that ending – I felt, well, should we talk about the ending at the end, probably?
No, I think we can talk about it right – the part right now, because it has to do with his personality.
Okay. Well, I was going to say – this. I mean, I'm not – what I'm about to say is not to do with the personality. It has more to do with the style of the movie. That felt like the I Am Iron Man moment, where you end with Iron Man, where he's like, I am Iron Man, and you end this movie where he spent the whole time trying to hold it back. Well, now he's in this shack in the mountains, and he's just like – opening his eyes, he gives a smile, and then cue the, you know, rock music or whatever it is that plays. But it's that I am Iron Man twist where, okay, next time we watch this character, he's going to be in a different place than he was at the beginning of this movie. And I really felt like, I remember even when I saw it the first time in the theater, that's what it felt like they were trying to copy, was that excitement of the I am Iron Man. I am the Hulk. I'm not trying to hold it back, but I am him.
You know, I don't like to agree with you, but I think you actually have something there. Because yeah. He really is at that end. He's moved away from trying to hide from it and moving closer to owning it. And he may not be fully, as Tony Stark would say, out there strutting yet, but he is getting closer to the ability for him to be able to get there.
Yeah. And even in Avengers, he's not necessarily in a point where he can – well, I guess maybe he is at a point where he can turn it on and off, right? I don't know about turning it off, but I know you can see that you can turn it on. And it's more he's holding things in check in Avengers. And that's what I – you know, when you go to a Hulk movie, you want to see Hulk. You want to see that character. And this is where your main character of Bruce Banner, he's at odds with the audience, because he spends the whole movie trying not to be the Hulk. And with Avengers, he's not. You know, it's just – and it's a surprise to us that, okay, when I need to be the Hulk, here's my secret, and he'll do it. But once he lets the monster out, he doesn't have the control that yep. that he would want, and that's why he wants to hold it in check. So yeah, I like where they're taking.
I think you got us to a good point there. I think we can talk about the other side of Banner, which is the Hulk.
The other guy. Yeah.
And you definitely do see he may not fully be in control yet, but with this Hulk, we do have some memories what occurred when he's back as Banner, and he also seems to have some recognition of those that are around him and what he's trying to do and to control when he's the other guy, because it's very, very clear that when he's interacting with Betty when she's in danger that he is trying to protect her.
Mm-hmm. Although in the opening credits, he does – inadvertently cause pain for people around him, and this they make a good case for him to run and to be away. Although I understand there's some cut scenes where he's like in, you know, the Arctic Circle or whatever, but if you're trying to be away and get away where you aren't going to hurt people, I don't know if moving to one of the most populated cities in the world, one of the most densely populated cities in the world, is the safest thing to do. But, you know, I'm not a scientist, and he is. So.
But this hiding in plain sight amongst people is something that he also does in the Avengers.
Yeah, yeah, he does. And he's helping people in the Avengers. And you know, here he's not there with a job where he's helping people, but he is intentionally helping the people around him. You know, whether it's standing up for someone who needs to, or doing a good job for his boss. But okay, let's talk about other guys some more, because if we keep on this track, I'm going to be talking about Bill Bixby. So let's oh, talk about other guys some more.
We're going to talk about Bill Bixby. Did you realize, by the way, that the other guy is voiced by Lou Ferrigno?
Yes, I had heard that. I didn't realize it when I saw it the first time, but I heard it afterward, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, again, it just comes back to the fact that I really do think that Ed Norton, as pretty much the creative lead in this movie, is writing a love letter to Bill Bixby and the 1970s version of the Incredible Hulk. I'll be honest, as a kid of the 70s, I love it. I loved every minute of it. I'm sorry I got off there, but yeah, the other guy.
So now we're back on the Bill Bixby track.
See, the problem is I think we're going to keep coming back to the Bill Bixby track.
Yes, we are, especially in this movie. Okay, so let's talk about other guy, and then let's talk about why we want to talk about Bill Bixby so much.
Okay, so the other guy. What do you have to say about it?
I like the design.
Yes.
I like the design better than Ang Lee's Hulk. I like the way he's rage, you know, but he's got a little bit more control, and he's a little more awareness, like you said, memories and that sort of thing. And he's definitely looking out for Betty, and you know, she has that calming influence on him, that's a great element. That's a great element of the comic. It's a great element here, where you've got that relationship there. So, and I love the cave scene with the two of them, where they're sitting there and he's raging against the rain, which I can't remember what it was in, but I saw a short story about the Hulk where it starts to rain and he just starts punching the rain and it won't stop. And he wears himself out against the one opponent that he can't defeat. The weather.
The weather! Yeah. It'll wear down mountains. You know what I find interesting? Again, I keep going back to these credits. We had to wait so long in the Hulk to even get a glimpse of Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in this set of credits, we see Hulk hands.
Yes, but
very early on.
But other than that, we are waiting a long time to see him still. I think it's 20 minutes or so.
20 minutes compared credits. To the 45 years we had to wait in Ang Lee's Hulk?
Yes, but we're still waiting. I mean, that's a sitcom right there that we just sat through. It's a half-hour sitcom.
I just feel like we're not hiding him like we were before.
Oh, but
maybe we
are.
We had a little bit more money for special effects.
No, Ed Norton is hiding him. He is fighting not to become Hulk, and so we're waiting 20 minutes for it to happen. And when it finally does happen, it's a horror movie. It's a great reveal.
Yes, it is.
In that factory, and it switches. It's kind of like Batman Begins in that way. Where when he finally shows up, it switches into this horror movie, and you're just waiting to see what's going to come out of the shadows, and you're getting glimpses, and you're seeing the after effects of him coming through. But it's a horror movie, man.
Hey, and if anything, when you see in that scene where you see the reveal, that's probably the one set of scenes in this whole movie where Blonsky is our eyes,
mm-hmm.
because of the fact that he cannot believe it. He's seen some stuff, and this is the craziest stuff he's ever seen.
Yeah, and the other thing is interesting because Ross is there, and we'll talk about Ross in a minute, but he doesn't tell them anything. Like, these guys are going in blind. And so Blonsky, yeah, he's angry, and he has every right to be, because when he finally sees Hulk, it's a monster. It is a horror movie. I love it. It's Aliens is really what it is. You got the military guys coming in. You got the monster in the shadows taking them out one by one.
I see it. I see it.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't like scary movies.
I know, but but this only lasted 5 minutes, so. Okay, so what do you think of this characterization of the Hulk, then? Are you with it? Are you on board with him?
I'm on board with it. I feel, again, like it's going back to Bill Bixby. I feel like this is a Hulk that Bruce Banner is able to point at what's going on, point at a problem. I think that because of the fact that Banner is intrinsically trying to be helpful and trying to be kind to people, that the Hulk is doing things also mm-hmm. to be protective of those that he cares about and to try to not cause too much smash. But I mean, he's not fully – it's not like in the Avengers where he's attacking aliens and being that directive yet. But I mean, we're getting there. In many ways, I do feel like the Incredible Hulk is us evolving towards who we get in the Avengers.
Yeah, I think you got a good point there where, yeah, you point Hulk at a problem and let him go. He's like a gun or a bomb or a water balloon if you want to go less violent. But you point out the problem, you shoot him on his way, and then he's going to take care of things. He might take care of things in the right way, might be in the wrong way. But again, this is like, yeah. We're in the TV series.
And really, I know we're going to talk about this later, but that's really what Banner is doing with him in the Battle of Harlem. He is pointing the Hulk at the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he knows that there's going to be repercussions. He knows he's not going to necessarily be able to control it. But the only solution that he can personally provide that problem is to point Hulk.
Yeah, and it's again, that classic where you have the brains and the brawn. And you have the brawn has no brains, and the brains really has no brawn, although he's trying to learn, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu or whatever that is. Yeah. But it is an interesting dichotomy where all that's left is, okay, how do we stop Abomination? It's going to take muscle. How am I going to escape this factory with my life and without the army taking me and taking my secrets and taking my DNA? I'm going to have to Hulk out. I'm going to have to let it happen. And, you know, not that he wants it to happen, but if it's going to happen, then it's going to happen. Let it go. And, yeah, because that's the other thing is he's hiding from Ross, not just to protect the people around him who he likes, you know, like Betty, but they want other guy. They want that that DNA. They want that secret.
Well, and that's Ross's biggest fear is that he's going to lose that valuable weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's what Banner's keeping away from him. So we've talked about Ed Norton.
Yeah.
The other big influence on this movie, and I'll continue to say it again and again and again, is Bill Bixby.
Okay. So let's talk about the Incredible Hulk TV series. So you were a fan as a child?
I was.
As a lad?
Yeah, I did a podcast with another group, and one of my top five childhood influences was, in fact, The Incredible Hulk. And, I mean, that show is really kind of that wandering through hero who goes from place to place, mm-hmm. solves a problem every week within an hour. And, again, much like this, Norton is pointing the Hulk at a problem if he is getting angry. But, I mean, they even have the same name. They're both The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, that's true.
You look at the opening credits, and it's pretty much in many ways, not frame for frame, but it is definitely an homage to those original credits with him strapped to the chair.
And with the blinking light that says danger, but the camera goes in on just the right way, so it just says anger.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all there.
Well, and so there's that there. I do love there is a scene where you see in the background Bill Bixby on TV. It's not a Hulk shot, but it's from The Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the fact that, hey, we've got Bill Bixby in a frame of this movie. I love the fact that Lou Ferrigno not only has his time as a cameo as a security guard, which is longer than his cameo in the security guard in the Aang movie, but he also is voicing the Hulk here. And to be honest, I mean, when we see Betty and Banner kind of on the road, you almost get the sense of, hey, that old TV show, This is the same sort of – this is almost the same Bruce Banner, the one who's had to learn how to get by on the road with limited resources, staying off the grid, but yet still able to move from place to place. I mean, it's just, I'm serious. This is a love letter from Ed Norton to Bill Bixby.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, this movie feels like you're watching an episode, or maybe it's a two-parter, you know, of the original show, except that you have – no, even in the show you had an episode where there was another monster that he had to fight. It wasn't as exciting. But you even had the Lonely Man theme, the piano, the do-do-do-do. I mean, that was in the score on purpose. And I think that was Ed Norton kind of, again, putting – I think we're laying a lot of the blame but also a lot of the applause here for what Ed Norton was doing. I loved that TV show as a child. Going back as an adult and watching it, it holds up in small quantities. But if you're going to do any of the binge viewing, like when I watched Breaking Bad the first time, I watched just episode after episode after episode. You can't do that with The Incredible Hulk because they're pretty much the same thing. You know, he walks into town, bullies push him around. He has to save everyone from the town, from the bullies.
He says the phrase.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. He hulks out. Hulk takes care of the problem. And then Bill Bixby comes back for the dim moment. And then he
runs
goes
from the reporter. Don't forget runs from the reporter.
Don't forget. What's his name? McGee. Jack McGee. Who's in this movie. He's a student reporter who took pictures.
Oh, I missed that.
He's in the movie. In fact, I wrote in my notes, Jack McGee, 3 exclamation points, because I don't think I noticed that the first time I saw it. But this time when I was watching, I was like, oh, that really, that's him.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't see this, but I'm actually smiling from ear to ear because I missed that.
That, I mean, it's a cool little Easter egg moment. You know, it's not a big deal, but it is a big deal if you like that show. So yeah, I mean, this, it feels like a couple episodes. It feels just from the beginning to the end. Now, when you get into the big battle at the end, that's when it changes, because they never really could do much with that, with the special effects of the time. He fought a bear, and he picks up the bear and throws the bear. And you see a stuffed bear fly across the screen. You know, I mean, it's...
My kids do that all the time.
Not a teddy bear. I mean, a stuffed bear. Like, a dead bear that they've, you know, stuffed the skin. But, you know what I mean? So
let's just remember, it's not like they had a lot of budget.
Plus, they were doing it... It was a weekly thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love what you're... You know, this whole element of that TV show being there. It just, this is an adaptation of the TV show, yeah, far more than the comic book, I think.
And I definitely agree. And again, I love it. I absolutely love it. So, so let's talk about another character. Let's talk about Betty.
Wait, you skipped one.
You skipped a note. I did skip in my notes that I sent to Ben. I mentioned Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Because this is one of my favorite Stan Lee cameos.
So why'd you skip it? Were you saving it?
Yeah, I just didn't know if it was appropriate.
It's appropriate.
Because, all right, I love the Stan Lee cameo. My kids love the Stan Lee cameo when he gets contaminated soda and begins to Hulk out.
Now, my understanding is that was not the original Stan Lee cameo. They originally planned for something else, and this was supposed to be like a kid or something. But here's what I want to know, Daniel. What do you think Stan Lee, what happened to him that it was reported and ended up on Thunderbolt Ross's desk?
Well, my kids think he's dead, that he died.
Oh, he just died?
That's what my kids are convinced he's dead.
Oh.
Now, I think that he hulked out and created a minor incident in the suburbs. And then because he just got a little bit of blood, then he shrunk down and never hulked out again.
Yeah, that's what I imagine. I totally imagine him hulking out a little bit. And I wish we could have seen a Stan Lee hulk out.
But I would say a Stanley Hulk out would look really good on YouTube, but I don't think it would have fit in the tone of this movie.
You know what would be awesome is if that was – if they could go back for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and actually do a YouTube video of Stanley Hulking out as like, you know, part of their files or something like that. Wouldn't that be cool?
Hey, it would. And he has shown his willingness to do stuff for these TV shows because he does have a role on the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon.
Yeah, and I've seen him in a couple other cartoons too. Like the Spider-Man series that we liked in the 90s. He was in the last episode as himself, and he got to go for a ride hanging onto Spider-Man's back as they were swinging from building to building. And
I honestly think that if people make things convenient for him, because he is an elder gentleman, and I think it is difficult for him to travel sometimes, but I think that if you can find a way to conveniently work him in, he will do it.
Here's the ultimate convenience, because it's a CG character until he de-hulks, because the YouTube video couldn't be him hulking out.
Okay.
It's him bursting out of a building, throwing a car, and then de-hulking, and you just film him lying on the ground. What happened? You know? It's easy. I'd love Simple it. As pie.
I'd support it.
When I write my episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and send it to Joss Whedon, it's going to be about the Great Lakes Avengers, and it'll have that scene in it.
That's just going to be a hot mess.
Oh, it's going to be awesome, is what it's going to be. And Joss Whedon is going to say, Ben Avery, why are you only working on comics? Come join me. Work with me. And I'll say, yeah, I'll consider it. I'll consider it. And it'll be based on my Great Lakes Avengers Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode spec script. Anyway, I think we should probably move on, right?
Yeah, let's move on to Betty.
To Betty Ross.
So what do you think of this Betty?
I don't mind her. I like Jennifer Connelly a lot, and I understand we had to leave her behind. We had to leave her dad behind from Ang Lee. I mean, they're cutting off all ties to Ang Lee. They bring in another name that is, you know, will put people in the seats because they know who she is. You know, this is Liv Tyler, who is in Armageddon. Of course, I might be getting the dates wrong, but you know, she's
been a long time since Armageddon by this point.
Has it? Okay, so yeah, so this is Liv Tyler from Armageddon. This is Liv Tyler from had Lord of the Rings started coming out at that point.
I believe so.
What year are we in anyway? This is 2008. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, this is she's a name. And yeah.
I will say she's someone that folks are familiar with, but I'm also going to argue she's probably not somebody who's selling tickets.
No, but she's enough of a name that she's I think she's selling some tickets.
I don't think she's selling many. Based on her Lord of the Rings work, I mean, that was a long time ago. I mean, that was 5 years earlier, and to me, again, I'm not a Lord of the Rings guy, but it was a side character.
Yeah, it was. It was.
And then I look at everything that she's done since the Hulk, and nothing here. Nothing here looks good. There's a whole 3-year period in which she made nothing.
Is there really?
Yeah. 2008.
Yeah, wow.
And then a big gap till 2011. I think
no, she was in Robot and Frank. Oh my goodness, that was a great movie. 2012, though.
Yeah, I think that this is a star who's on the decline.
Yeah, you might be right there.
I think it was somebody who they could get. And I'll be honest, and I don't really have a ton of time for Betty, because Betty wasn't with Bill Bixby. So for me, Jennifer Connelly, Liv Tyler, they were just kind of there.
Well, there's enough of the comic book Hulk that I followed that I'm with her. I mean, Clark Kent goes with Lois Lane, Peter Parker and Mary Jane and you know, Bruce Banner and Betty Ross. I mean, those
occasionally.
Yeah, on and off, but but more on than off as far as my memory goes. The comics that I had read. So,
yeah, I just could do without her. She's nice enough. She's helpful. She helps Bruce out.
She's important to the story. She is.
Well, to this story.
Yes.
But, I mean, I easily could see the end of this movie. Then if you were to do another Norton Hulk, which would have never happened, I could easily see him going off from wherever he was in Canada to the next little small town where he gets bullied and he never needs a girl.
Well, in the TV show, there was another girl in every town. I mean, yeah. He's,
so,
yeah. Of course, this is after he lost his wife. And now he's, well, anyway, we're going to.
Yeah, I'm good.
We're going back to the TV show. Okay, so. All right, that's all you want to say about Betty?
Yeah, she's nice enough. She's helpful. I think she's designed for us to like her, but, I mean, she's just there for me. She's something you can move around in the scene.
Yeah, she is definitely a pawn for the storytellers to help tell the story. She could be taken out and replaced. Honestly, she could be taken out completely, I think, with the elements they already have in place. Because he's not going to find her specifically for her.
So, let's talk about a character associated with Betty.
Okay.
So, what did you think of Phil Dunphy?
I like this guy so much. And I had forgotten it was him. So, I saw the movie. And like the character, I like Doc Samson. I like him. And I wish he'd had green hair, you know, but they, you know, they have to keep the gamma radiation thing, you know, confined. They, you know, that's for the sequels, right?
Which never happened.
Yeah. So then my wife and I, we like ABC comedies. We like The Neighbors. We like The Middle. And my wife especially likes Modern Family. He's my favorite dude on that show. And
I argue that he is me.
Yes. I don't think I can go quite that far because he's more funny maybe than I am when he messes up. When I mess up, it's usually dumb and not funny. But yeah, we like him a lot. And then I go back and watch the movie for this and I'm like, oh my gosh, there he is. And there's a little bit of Phil Dunphy in him. There is. You can see it. A little bit of Phil Dunphy and Doc Samson.
And I will say, this is probably one of the most likable characters in the whole movie.
Absolutely.
Because to me, his whole sequence where he talks to General Ross about putting Betty in danger, I mean, he very clearly cares for Betty, and he's also willing to let go of Betty if being with Bruce is what makes her happy.
And he's also willing to take a chance and be a conscience to General Ross. And say, you know, basically say what you're doing is not good. This is wrong.
And yes, he did sell out Banner to General Ross, but it's also clear that once he understands how General Ross operates, what General Ross's motivations are, he's done with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here's the other thing then. And I can't remember if we've talked about this on the podcast or if this is something that was just posted on Facebook, but we could have Doc Samson on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And why not? He's already on ABC. You know?
Well, bring him over. I think from what I know, little I know of Ty Burrell, I think he's the sort of guy that'd be up for something like that.
He seems like a fun guy.
Yeah.
And
I think he very easily could work into his schedule. Yeah, I'll run up to Canada, which or wherever they're filming this, and you know, I'll give him a week of my time and put on a green wig or dye my hair green for a week. And
yes, because yeah,
it'd be fantastic.
If he's on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there has to be some sort of gamma radiation fallout, something.
Yeah, it's the only way you could bring him on.
Yeah.
He has to have green hair.
And it's a source of consternation for him, probably.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. No, I bring him in to, you know, be Doc Samson, be that psychologist to the heroes. You know, he could be kind of that, you know, it could almost be like a setup for a Hannibal Lecter kind of thing where he's there, you know, as a profiler to say, you know, okay, so here's what you're working with. Here's what this person is trying to do. Here's why they're trying to do it. I think that you could have some really, you could bring him in and it's not just stunt casting.
No, he could have a legitimate role.
Yeah.
You could have somebody like Ward who's like really uncomfortable about this guy with green hair and mm-hmm. is trying to find out more.
Yeah.
I don't quite trust him. He's got green hair. Nobody has green hair. Is he a punk rocker? What's going on?
Well, you know who has green hair? Other guy has green hair.
The other guy doesn't have green hair.
And there's what's the connection? Are we going to trust this guy? You know, is he going to Hulk out on us?
You never know. I like it. I think it's a great idea. I think it should be included in your script that you submit before the Great Lake Avengers.
He's there to profile the Great Lake Avengers. Okay, moving on.
So let's talk about one more Betty related character, which is Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah, we need to talk about him.
Is Thunderbolt Ross more or less?
Did you just call him Thunderbutt?
Maybe. Probably not, but I mean.
We'll save that for the replay. William Hurt. I like William Hurt. I really do. And, you know, whenever he shows up in a movie, I'm just, oh, cool. He's a solid actor. He seems like, you know, he embodies whatever role he's doing. But, I mean, let's just face it. Daniel, we agree on this thing, right?
Sam Elliott's the best role.
Yes, we agree there.
and he wanted to be Ross again.
But Cutting the ties.
So this is how I imagine it went down. Bill, buddy, we want you to be a general in the Hulk. Some light work. You come in for a few weeks. We pay you. You don't have to try very hard because I don't feel like you tried very hard. You just come in, have some fun. Hit the catering truck.
And have an awesome Magnum stash.
Hey, did you notice that, and I'm kind of excited about this, that Thunderbolt Ross lost a star between movies?
Did he really?
He goes from 4 to 3.
Interesting. Of course, there's no connection between the two movies.
But I still love the fact that he does not outrank Sam Elliott.
You can't beat Sam Elliott. I mean, Sam Elliott, I think you said that he was born to play this role. And if you said this, I will back that 100%. If you did not say it, I will back it 90% just in case it's someone else, you know, who I don't like. But
it was said.
Yeah. I mean, he was born to play that part. And he was perfect. And so I don't think that William Hurt did a serviceable job, but I just didn't feel that same kind of gravity that Sam Elliott brings.
He came in and he acted and then he left.
I give him a little more credit than that because he's William Hurt, you know. I don't think that he just came in and, you know, read his lines and hit the catering. I don't know. He really.
You know what? You're right, Ben. I think he probably took naps in his trailer too.
Come on, man! It's William Hurt. You got to give this guy some props. I mean,
plenty of props in movies that aren't this one. Wait a minute. Is this Alien Love coming out?
What?
Isn't he an alien?
No, that's John Hurt.
Oh, okay.
That's John Hurt. No, but he is Dark City. And
I think you're just blinded by the fact that, you know, you see the stash.
No.
You just let him go through.
No, I mean, he does play the same character in every movie. Or maybe it feels like the same character. And so when he brings that to this movie, it's not the guy you want. And he's not Sam Elliott. That's the problem.
And the really ironic thing, and again, you already said it, they're not the same movie. At the end of The Hulk, you do feel like Sam Elliott's Ross is shown emotion. You know, he's mm-hmm. grown. I never feel like this Ross grows.
Yeah, I don't either. And that's a problem because I do feel like he's pretty much the same guy at the beginning as he is at the end. And when I say end, I mean that, you know, that extra scene with Tony Stark. I don't feel like he's closer to his daughter.
No.
I don't think he's changed his motivations at all.
Don't even have a scene at the end where she mentions she hasn't talked to him for a while.
Mm-hmm.
After all this has gone through.
Yeah, this Ross is not as engaging as the other one. No. And definitely, I think one thing that many, many people can agree on is that Ang Lee's Hulk if there's one thing that's better about Ang Lee's Hulk, it's Ross. It's General Ross.
And even I will give it that point.
Yeah.
So you said the word, and I'm worried about you because you're sitting on these, you know, you could be sitting crisscross style there on the floor, and I don't want your legs to fall asleep.
Okay.
So we probably should get to the end and talk about Blonsky and the Battle of Harlem.
We're missing Mr. Blue, though.
Well,
I mean, the whole Stearns thing.
The only comment, and I work in for a university, and the only comment that I have to make about Mr. Blue is, where does this guy get his IRB approval? Because it's pretty clear that he is working with human subjects in a way that is unsafe and unsupervised.
Yeah. Did he need to be in this movie? I feel like he's only there for the sequel. He's only there to be the leader later on. And there isn't going to be a sequel to this movie.
No. Well, he dies. He doesn't make it out of this movie.
No, he makes it.
No.
I'm pretty sure he does.
I'm pretty sure he's dead.
Because there's implications in some of the comic book stuff that they take him alive.
Well.
Yeah. Of course, you're not reading those right now, but.
I'm not.
But when I'm done, I'll send them your way so you can, you know, glance through them. But there's the implication that Black Widow in one of these comes out and she, like, he wakes up and she has to tranquilize him or something like that. But. Yeah, I mean, they basically, the way that the comics leave it is that S.H.I.E.L.D. has come in and now has custody of him. And he's green and has a big, tall head.
Hmm.
But honestly, we didn't need him in this movie.
No, we don't need him.
So he's kind of like Betty. Although, take Betty out and Mr. Blue is giving him motivation to come out of hiding and come into back to the States. So, all right. So Blonsky, Abomination, Battle of Harlem.
Yeah, my understanding is you have a few things to say about the Battle of Harlem.
Do I have a few things to say about the Battle of Harlem? I have.
You seem to think that we are going to see it again.
We are going to see it again. No. We've already seen it.
Oh.
We've already seen the Battle of Harlem. It's like they said, you know, Iron Man is so good. Let's take Iron Man's ending and let's just, you know, do the same thing only with Hulks instead of armor. I really feel like watching the Battle of Harlem, we're watching the end of Iron Man. And we're, you know, they're battling in the street, you know, they're throwing cars at each other. There's civilians all around. It's the middle of the city. It feels a lot like the same movie.
But isn't that really an action movie staple? Because as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about the Transformers movie. I'm thinking about Man of Steel. I mean, it's a traditional watch out for your insurance rates because we're going to fight in downtown and break everything.
Yeah, and it's also a superhero movie thing where you're fighting your opposite. You know, you're not just fighting a random bad guy, but, you know, Iron Man is fighting Iron Monger. And so Hulk is going to fight Abomination, the opposite.
And you are so right in the opposite, because unlike Banner, Blonsky wants this.
Yes.
He literally asks for it. He begs for it. At one point, he says, if I just had that a body 10 years younger with what I know today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what his goal is. He's looking for that fight where Banner is trying to stay calm, cool, and collected. Blonsky just wants to brawl, and he doesn't care. He just wants the fight.
Yeah, and I like the build for the character where, you know, at the beginning he's just a soldier and he's a good soldier. But when he sees the raw power, he wants the raw power. And so then you have that second fight on the college campus, which we didn't really talk about much, but that was a pretty fantastic fight and a pretty old school comic book fight with the, you know, the sound guns and, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff going on. And you have Blonsky coming in, you know, able to hold his own a little bit more against the Hulk. I always felt that it was just kind of silly. There's no way Blonsky was ever going to be the Hulk's equal in that situation on the college campus. So when he goes in with a pistol and, you know, heightened reflexes and strength, so he's able to take the punches. You know, but he's he's still, there's no way he can stand against Hulk.
No, but again, he doesn't really know that. I think we know that, but I don't think he knows that.
I think he's smart enough. I think he's just, in that situation, I think he's got the bloodlust. You know, he's got this stuff coursing through his veins, and it's pushing him. It's similar to the super soldier in serum in Captain America, where it brings out what's inside. And I think when he's got that super soldier serum, what comes out is his bloodlust, his want for the brawl. Yeah, like
it's pure aggression.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as we see with the Battle of Harlem, he doesn't care who gets between him and that fight.
No. And he didn't care before the fight came to him. He was not really caring too much. So
now, if anything, again, when you talk about opposites, Abomination is a little bit smarter than the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
But we also do see in this fight, you know, we see the Hulk using the force of creating his own wind to put out a fire. You know, the Hulk's not stupid.
No. He's more like the comic book Hulk than the TV show Hulk. You know, the comic book Hulk was able to say, you know, leave Hulk alone. Hulk just wanted to be left alone. And I think he actually said something along those lines in the college fight or something like that. But he's got a brain. It's still pretty weak, but it's puny. It's a puny brain, but he's got it going on. And which brings us to the ending, you know, where he has the chain wrapped around Abomination's neck. And what happens? Betty comes and tells him not to do it. Don't do it. And this is where you see what is this Hulk made of. What do you think about that ending?
I think that it is a superhero cliche that heroes don't kill. But I think we're beginning to see some changes in that trend.
Yeah.
Where some heroes aren't above killing. And in many ways, some, you know, it would have been. See, we just don't know what the sequel to this is. I mean, we have the consultant piece at the very end where we know Abomination is still alive in that cameo.
Mm-hmm.
And still under Thunderbolt Ross's control. And you get the idea that he can be used as a weapon or a tool for good, but. In my mind, if you were to have another sequel to this and Abomination was in it, he's going to kill people because he's going to want the Hulk to come out and play.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious where they were thinking about going or if they were even thinking that they were going to go anywhere. It's like, let's get this done and then we'll figure that out later. But yeah, because this is where you have that classic Beauty and the Beast kind of situation where the Beast is out and the Beauty comes and says, no, don't do it. She didn't say, at least I don't remember her saying, I'm pretty sure she didn't say, if you do it, you'll be just like him. But it was close.
Again, that's the superhero cliche. You don't kill because if you kill, you're just like that villain. If Batman kills, then he's like the Joker.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, Superman and there's a situation there. It happens in so many. It was in Superman 2 where he had to deal with Zod and Ursa and Non. It's Batman. Of course, Batman kills in the movies. And
but I mean, if you look at the comic books, how many people would still be alive if you had just off Joker?
And that's a question that you have to deal with, but I don't know if that's a question that can really be answered.
I'm just saying that the one guy that got killed immediately after the first escape of the Joker from Arkham, he probably wasn't really worried about whether or not the Joker could be redeemed.
Well, and here's the other thing is, I mean, obviously Gotham has some of the worst prisons ever because they're always escaping. Everyone is escaping. I mean, Mad Hatter is escaping from Arkham Asylum. They really need to look into, you know, some other situations. You know, you have Batman living in Gotham. Batman is the greatest detective ever. He is a big-time scientist, inventor. He's created his Batcave. He can't create a prison that will hold people in. There's some problems. There's some problems in Gotham.
This isn't the Agents of Shade podcast here.
That's true. That's true. Let's get back to it.
So I think it's time to wrap up this movie, which I enjoy this extended episode of The Incredible Hulk, this two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
And it does really – it does feel like it would have had a better feel on TV. But here's my question for you. Could you have seen Ed Norton in The Avengers?
No. And I say that quickly because I didn't know what you were going to ask, but I absolutely not. And I don't know if that's because Mark Ruffalo did such a great job that I can't retroactively place Ed Norton in there. But I just can't imagine him playing off on the other characters the way Mark Ruffalo did.
No, I agree. I agree. And I think that if Ed Norton had been cast, we know he had such a heavy hand in the story of this movie. I think Ruffalo was probably more willing to take the script that was handed to him, where Ed Norton would have been like, you know, I think that Banner should say this to Tony Stark.
Yeah, I have a feeling that that was pretty much the reason, too. Is they were just like, we don't want to deal with this again.
Well, and Kevin Feige's made it clear, if you are difficult to work with, he has a plan, and if you can't stick to his plan, you're probably not coming back. Rhodey.
So, and we'll see what happens with Thor.
Yeah.
And Avengers 2. And already news is out that Loki is not in Avengers 2. So I'm wondering what's happening with Chris Hemsworth. Is he going to be there? Or is it going to be something... is Thor going to be there? We'll see. I think he will. I haven't heard anything to the contrary to that. But there has been those rumors about recasting Thor.
Well, and let's be honest, the way this is set up and the fact that we're seeing more heroes and more hero teams in the future, you don't even need to recast Thor. You just don't include him in the Avengers.
Yeah.
Not every Avengers story has Thor in it.
So it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
So, any last words here on The Incredible Hulk?
I liked
it. I have a piece of news that I have to talk to you about.
Okay. I liked Incredible Hulk. I like Ang Lee's Hulk, too. It's two different, very different movies, and I'm okay with that. That's it. And I like Avengers, too. And rewatching Incredible Hulk now, I do see much more of a connection between those two Incredible Hulks and those two Bruce Banners as far as arc goes, like you said. So, yeah, that's that.
I'm always angry. All right, we got to talk about a piece of news.
Okay.
And I know this is a little bit of old news because we haven't recorded in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But Samuel L. Jackson thinks that Nick Fury should appear on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And Welcome to Level 7 thinks that's really cool.
Welcome to Level 7 thinks that's awesome. Now, his suggestion
is also so awesome.
It's all voiceover that he is Charlie of Charlie's Angels. But I mean, he could probably knock those out in an afternoon for an entire season if he wanted to.
Well, he could do that. And honestly, of all the people in any Marvel movie, his voice is the one that you can recognize his voice without seeing his face. You know exactly who he is, and it carries itself. Yeah. He can characterize the character with just the voiceover. I think it'd be awesome.
And he's told Joss, I want to do it.
Yeah,
I mean, he's the one bringing the suggestion to the table.
I think, honestly, the only barrier might be money. And
how much money is he even asking for?
Well, we don't know. I mean, obviously, that's not part of
the thing about conversation. I think when Samuel L. Jackson has what he thinks is a cool idea, I think he's willing to do it on the cheap.
And maybe he is. And I'm just saying that might – there are two factors that might not let this happen. And one is money. And then the other is, now they – what do they have planned? Are they going to be able to shoehorn him into that? And will it feel like it's shoehorned? Because I trust Joss Whedon enough, for the most part, to trust that he's not going to shoehorn something in without it feeling like it has a purpose. Say what you want about him killing off characters, but when he kills off characters, he believes there's a purpose. And it may not feel like it sometimes, but I think he believes that there is a reason for that. And so for him to bring in Sam Jackson, it needs to be a solid reason. It has to be an important thing for like that episode or for, you know, the arc of the season or something like that. But I do think it'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic.
So we will see if this happens. And if it does, we will squee. Are we allowed to squee?
We're allowed to squee.
Okay. I mean, if you can say what you say that I'm never going to say, then we can squee, right?
Oh, we're going to squee.
Yeah. Squeeing will happen. So I think that that's it then for this episode.
I do want to talk about a piece of feedback.
I do not think that this is that. This is it then for this episode.
So this, do you know why June 7th, 2013 is a big day in the history of this podcast?
June 7th, 2000 what?
13.
No, why?
Because that's the day that Clark Gregg found out about us.
That's right. Yes.
So, I think it's official that David Clements is now, what, level 4?
I'm going to give him level 5.
Okay, I'm willing to go level 5.
Yeah.
He tweeted out to Clark Gregg, hey, how about, do you know about a cool new podcast? It's all about you, Marvel and S.H.I.E.L.D. And and Clark Gregg responded, I do now.
Yes, and tweeted that to everyone. And so we might have some people listening right now because of that tweet. If so, welcome. And if not, then still welcome. But
see, now what's hilarious and what you're all missing out on is when this happened, I got a message from you that it happened. And then I proceeded over the next 2 hours because I was in meetings sending you messages that were like, where are you? I'm in a meeting and I want to get up and scream and point out to everybody on my phone that Clark Gregg just tweeted about us. Where are you? Why can't we talk about this now?
So. Yeah, well, and then that was also when Ming-Na followed us on Twitter, and I was gone. I was going and getting, you know, a bunch of prizes and stuff for the camp that I'm working at right now, and you're, like, tweeting me, or no, you're sending me these messages on Facebook. Where are you? Check your Twitter list. Look at your Twitter followers. Do you see who is the most recent Twitter follower that you have? And I get home, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. Oh, look at Daniel. He's going nuts. Sorry, Daniel.
Well, it's because it's a Disney princess.
Yeah, it's double whammy for you, definitely.
So I think that is pretty much it.
Okay. That is pretty much it. And if you want to become higher than level 5, boy, that must take something pretty huge, Daniel.
Somebody may have to arrange for him to appear.
Yeah,
it'll be awkward because it'll be a lot of Mr. Gregg.
No, I would have that problem with Ming-Na. I think I've already said that before. That if we were like ever to talk with her, I'd be stuttering, and because I'm a huge fan of hers from Stargate Universe. I really enjoyed Stargate Universe. In fact, when I get home from camp, I'm going to rewatch Stargate Universe because of Ming-Na being on S.H.I.E.L.D.
So. Mr. Gregg, how does it feel to be the coolest S.H.I.E.L.D. agent of all time? Go.
Are you saying, and I would agree with you on this, but are you saying that he is cooler than Sam Jackson?
Yes.
I would agree. I'm with you there.
Hey, how does someone follow you, my friend?
Well, here's how you can follow me. You can follow me on Twitter. I am on Twitter at Whispering Loon. You can also go to my website, benavery.com. And you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. You can follow us on Twitter, level7pod, is that right?
Yep.
And so how can they follow you and get a hold of you?
You can find me at betweendisney.com, and you can find me at Twitter at @betweendisney, and on Facebook at facebook.com/betweendisney.
All right. So with all that said, I think we do have something happening after the credits, but for right now, I just want everyone to remember, don't make me hungry. You wouldn't like me when I'm hungry.
hey, Ben, I know you've been pretty excited about Man of Steel.
Have been. Yes.
Give me all the spoilers that you possibly can, which is a warning to all our listeners.
Yeah, listeners, we are now talking about Man of Steel because it is a superhero movie. We're doing it part of the after credits, though, because it's not a Marvel movie. That's the disclaimer.
They're just trying to become like Marvel.
They certainly are. And although I didn't feel it, well, Man of Steel felt more like Batman Begins than it felt like Iron Man.
They've already got their Whedon. They've given Goyer the contract. So he's going to be overseeing these things.
Yes, but I didn't feel like it in this movie. This did not feel like it was setting up a bigger universe. Although it did set up a big universe.
Even with the Wayne Enterprises satellite, you didn't feel like it
was. And the LexCorp truck, yeah. No, I mean, those are Easter eggs. Those aren't necessarily universe building.
So did you like it?
I did. And here I'm recording this before I record my episode with my other podcast. So, yeah, if you follow Strangers and Aliens, then you're hearing it here first. But, yeah, I liked this movie. What about you, Daniel?
I loved it.
Did you?
I was disappointed with Iron Man 3. I hated Star Trek Into Darkness.
You hated that?
I hated it.
Oh, I didn't realize
this
that.
This, for me, is the movie of the summer. The live-action movie of the summer. I think it's fantastic. I think it was good. I think it was surprising. My wife and I both had a discussion as we left about how we expected, every Superman movie / story follows the same pattern. So we were expecting the story to be told in the exact same way as mm-hmm. we've seen it done 3-4 times. And we actually liked the fact that they were bold and just told the story in a different way.
Yeah, well, and they told it in a non-linear way. For one, which is kind of cool, doing flashbacks
really
and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, it felt more like a comic book in that way, where you have something happen and it causes the characters to flashback and to see, oh, well, that's when his father talked about this, or some kids caused this to happen. And yeah, I thought it was really, really good movie. I'm still not quite sure how I feel about some of the elements of the movie, some of the thematic elements of the movie. I'm trying to figure out if they even knew what they were trying to say with the movie. I think that they knew what they wanted to say, but I don't know if they actually were able to say some of the things with the theme and stuff. But this is a movie that makes you think if you let it. And I think that's a really good that's good storytelling for me.
And if you don't let it, it's just going to have a lot of action and
lots of punching
and
yeah,
lots of insurance claims.
Yeah,
I will say, I am a stickler, as for accuracy.
Okay,
so I did live in Kansas, and I've never seen a town in Kansas with the size of Smallville that had its own IHOP. Just saying.
I can't speak for Kansas, but I can speak for some small towns that I've lived in that if not IHOP, they've had Denny's or something along those lines. But yeah, wow, it's a big, giant superhero movie, and it goes into some big, giant questions, and I don't think it necessarily answers them satisfactorily, but yeah, it does the good thing that science fiction movies do, which is sets up a question, gives an answer. It makes you think, okay, is this the answer? Is this where this should have gone? Was there a different way? I liked it. It was fantastic. Now,
and you just said the word science fiction, and I think that that's a good one too, because there really is a sci-fi movie element going on in here too. It's not just superheroes. There's a sci-fi story. And as it opened, I kind of almost got a Star Wars feel when we were on Krypton.
I got a Star Wars feel on Krypton, and there were portions on Earth where I got a Close Encounters of the Third Kind Steven Spielberg feel.
Yes.
It was kind of weird. Because you have him, in the house in Kansas, out in the middle of the field, and they're looking up into the sky and seeing, a flying saucer, basically. And there's messages on the TV. The TVs are, and the power is going out. And yeah, it felt like a Spielberg movie. So you have George Lucas, you have Steven Spielberg, you have, I like what you said about, the pattern to a Superman story, and this definitely broke the mold.
See, and so this, this is where I'm at with Star Trek, because one of the things that I've been asked somewhere else is, what does Star Trek need to do next? And I made the comment, they need to do something different. And I think that Star Trek should be taking notes on Man of Steel, because to me, they took Man of Steel, took a story that we all know, or we all think we know it inside and out, and they tweaked it just enough to make it feel different, to not make you feel like you knew where the next beat necessarily was. And that's what I mean when I say something like Star Trek needs to do something different. They need to tell it in a way in which I don't anticipate the next move.
I'll say this, though, and this is spoilers for Star Trek and Man of Steel now. And I'll expand more on this when we talk about it with my Strangers and Aliens podcast. So I don't want to give away too much here, just in case people are listening and they're going to switch over to the other one. But Star Trek Into Darkness felt like they were remaking Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 3, and throw in there a bit of, you know, some original series stuff. And Man of Steel, in a lot of ways, felt like it was a remake of Superman and Superman 2.
I won't say remake. I will say homage.
I'm going to use the word remake, because, you know, look at the beginning. You have the destruction of Krypton. You have Jor-El. You have the imprisonment of Zod and his people. You have the fight in Smallville.
You don't have him in the White House.
What?
But you don't have him in the White House.
No, you don't have him in the White House, but you don't need him in the White House.
But that fight in Smallville is exactly what I mean on taking notes. Star Trek needing to take notes.
Let me ask you this. Why didn't they just name that woman? Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you.
You got walking down the street, a small female Kryptonian, and a big guy who doesn't talk.
And
they don't need to have the same name, but you know instantly this is a reference to Superman 2.
But why didn't they? I mean, why not? That's my question. You're going there anyway with Zod. Why not?
Didn't need to remake it.
But I feel like they did. I really do feel like they did. And, you know, the ending, putting them back in the Phantom Zone, and if it was a remake of the first and second, it also – I mean, there's lots of elements from the comic books that they were taking too, but – but it was okay, because it was different. It wasn't – I shouldn't say it was a remake, a strict remake, because they did make some changes just like Star Trek did. But I did feel like you had that same kind of thing where we're looking back at the past but doing something new with those elements from the past. And I'm glad Lex Luthor was not in it.
You know, and that worried me. How are we going to have a Superman movie without Lex Luthor? And they pulled it off.
Yeah, I think that the sequel is going to be Lex Luthor basically saying, I'm saving Earth from this alien menace, this super powerful being that you all trust but shouldn't, and I know better, and he's going to be in the way of my plans. I'm getting rid of him.
Yeah.
I think that Lex Luthor will be the focal point, and probably Brainiac too. That was one thing is watching this movie. I could see, why not Brainiac? Why did it have to be Zod? But the whole thing with Jor-El and Zod, I mean, you had to have that conflict. And but let's talk about real quickly, I think one last element before we shut this post-credit sequence down. You had mentioned, talking about the Incredible Hulk, that cliche where heroes don't kill. So what did you think about the ending of Man of Steel, where you have the hero, he kills, and it's final? It is a final moment where there's...
And it's not that he accidentally threw him down a hole.
No.
It's an intentional... I was all right with it. Again, going back to a reference I made earlier in this episode about, you know, to the guy who immediately got killed after Joker escaped, I don't think he cared if Joker could still be reformed after he's dead. I think he just wanted to be alive. And, you know, he definitely impacted those four people who Zod was going to use his heat vision on. Now, he may not have saved all those people in the buildings that were falling around them. But, you know, I was okay with it. I think Zod made it clear. My whole mission was to protect Krypton. And now that that's done and you've stopped me from that mission, I'm going to do nothing but kill everyone forever. And I think it was almost the movie he had to make.
I think it was, too. I wish he hadn't, necessarily. But I also feel like this is a growing moment for the character. This is Superman becoming Superman. This is Superman Begins, honestly. where... What?
I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, he's not really the Clark Kent we know. He's not really the Superman, you know. He still is learning. He's just learned how to fly. You know, he's just done that just, you know, a short time ago. This is the beginning of a hero, and this is him... This is a defining moment for that character, I think, that where he will look back as they do sequels at that moment and did I make the right choice? Did I do the right thing? Was there another way?
And this would be that question right there. Was there another way is exactly the sort of question they should be asking in Man of Steel 2.
Yeah. And this Man of Steel movie, though, it caused me anyway to talk and to think about, you know, these questions and let's not even get started about the whole, you know, all the Christology symbol that they threw in there with the perfectly framed, oh, here's Superman wondering if he can do what he's going to do. And well, what's in the stained glass right behind him? Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane, you know.
But that's so much the Superman mythos right there.
And I think that's more of a modern element coming in with like the 70s, especially the original Superman movie. Again, it's a homage, if you want to call it that, or a remake of the original, where they're bringing in these ideas of, you know, the Messiah and the priest standing there with his hill, with his shoulder looking like a hill and a cross on it. And it's just like, wow, this is a really easily photographed church. It's very simple to, you know, set the frame to find those things that, anyway.
No, it was, I liked it.
And it wasn't as dark as the Batman trilogy. And Superman smile. Christopher Nolan, Christian Bale, not a whole lot of smiling going on.
No.
So, yeah.
And Lois actually shows she's a decent reporter.
And I like that setup for Man of Steel, too, where she knows who he is. And I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it, too.
Yeah, if you are tied into one Superman who is your Superman, this is not going to be that Superman. You know, whoever you like as Superman, this is not it. But if you like the idea of Superman, I think that you'll enjoy this movie. So do you think that they're going to be able to successfully go into a Justice League through this?
I mean, that's their plan. I guess my big concern, to be honest, is... The Justice League script has been thrown out, and they're going to do a new Justice League script now. So does this mean Aquaman's back in?
I can only hope.
Because they're missing an opportunity if there's no Aquaman.
Yeah, the only problem with... Well, now we're talking about that, but...
They're missing an opportunity.
The only problem is you have to create a whole world for Aquaman, a whole world for Green Lantern... And a whole world for Wonder Woman. And that's... It can be done, but that's just something to consider. So, I want Aquaman to... I want to see him on the big screen. I want to see him get his own movie. I know that probably won't happen, but...
This is the gateway.
All right, well, I think we should probably... Oh, what's your final word on Man of Steel?
Again, I love it. I think it's the movie of the summer.
All right. That's a good final word.
Live-action movie of the summer. I still have hope for Monsters University.
That's a good final word. So I think that's goodbye then. What do you think?
All right. Peace out later. Bye.
All right.
Bye.